Wasn't that awesome? Thank you to everyone that participated. We were so excited. I had tears coming down my eyes when I first started watching that to see, you know, I hope that we started something that we can continue, that everybody can be excited about, but that also meets those goals of capturing the information and that wisdom and those stories that make not only our industry better, but makes us strong individually and makes this organization, the HMA, better because of it. So with that, though, we're going to continue the conversation. One, I'm going to say that this project is continuing. We did decide this year that we're going to change the medium to present this and to capture this information, and we're going to move on with technology, and we're going to a podcast. So we're going to start doing more audio type work. So just be on the lookout. If you're interested and have a story you want to share, let us know. Let Linda, Amanda, Darlene know. And we're going to start trying to capture more and more of this information. But the next thing we've got, Linda, thank you for moving the chairs. I'm going to invite my panelists up. And we're going to continue this conversation about mentoring and mentorships. So please come on up. As they're making their way, the panel consists of four mentors, industry leaders. These guys were identified by our Next Gen Council as a mentor to one of them. The people that identified them, the Next Gen or the mentorees, are also on stage. Our mentors are Bob Miller with Frank Miller Lumber Company, Troy Brown with Kretz Lumber, Skipper Beal with Beal Lumber Company, and Nordic Thompson with Thompson Appalachian Hardwoods. Our mentor... Good job. And our mentorees are Jeff Henderson with Anderson Tully, Nick Thompson, Thompson Appalachian Hardwoods, and Nathan Thompson, TNS Hardwoods. Y'all ready? Oh, I have a paper for you. They're ready. I made them all notes. So, well, first we're going to start the conversation, and I am going to ask the first question, and that is to the gentleman in the front row. Why is it important to be mentored in life?
I think when you have a mentor, it's someone that you've developed a relationship with in the past, and you can rely on the information that they give to you. And you know, it's hard to go it alone, And as these guys start to move their way up, too, it gets even a little bit more lonely. And someday they're going to be mentoring. When I get called for a question by them, I tend to answer questions back or ask questions back then. But it's really hard to go it alone. And there's a lot of information out there from a lot of smart people that have done some tremendous things in this business. So that's why I went first, because these guys on my right are the smart people.
I guess for me personally, I don't like to fail in life. And each year you have marriages, careers, friendships, and families that fail and fall apart. And when I look at mentors, they actually help alleviate the chances of those failures. The other thing that I look at with mentors is that they give you the tools to succeed, not only in your professional lives, but also in your personal lives. So when you look at it, the stresses and frustrations that we otherwise have to deal with in our lives, our mentors in our lives can actually help reduce those stresses and those frustrations. So that's why mentorship, in my opinion, is very important for me.
I just have a hard time finding someone, and have had a hard time finding someone that really understands what it's like to run out of logs that's not in the lumber business. Have y'all ever found that to be the case? people just can't identify with our daily challenges. They've got their own challenges, of course, but they can't really identify with the emotions and the things that we go through. And, you know, when you're signing the paychecks and you're writing those, signing those log settlements on a Friday, and, you know, you're dealing with your banker, you're dealing with, you know, a disgruntled employee, or maybe there's a claim on a load of lumber. You know how that stuff piles up on you. And I'll tell you, for me, mentorship for me has been when I can pick up the phone and I can call, and there, you guys are sitting in this room, many of you. How many times have I called and cried on your shoulder and you picked me up? Is that mentorship? I'd say that's being a friend, a close friend, because you identify with where we are. You know, we talk about the price of lumber and what's going to happen with common red oak, and, you know, what are you doing about my sawyer quit? I can't find a saw filer. Woe is me and all that. But, you know, when we get through, how many times do we say, but, man, it's going to be okay. We're going to get there. You know, the market's going to pick up. Things are going to be okay. It's going to quit raining. How many of you guys have had somebody tell you that? It's going to quit raining. Spring is going to come. Sunshine, and those logs are going to flow. I tell you guys, I don't know about y'all, but the mentorship of encouragement amongst us, many of us do business together, and if we don't, you know, we're still friends. And that, to me, is the value that's been in the mentorship that I received from you guys. Thank you.
So why is it, what have you gained from a mentor, and what's important about it? I'd be remiss in not saying my father was my mentor. Of course, I grew up and I learned more about sawmilling, the little bit that I know, probably around the kitchen table or when he's driving me somewhere on a trip. My dad loved this industry. He loved everything about it. He was passionate about it. He loved machinery, and he really, when he shut his mill down in 75, what he didn't feel sorry for himself. He hated to lose the people that worked for him at the time. That was the toughest thing. But as far as being a mentor, I'll never forget my dad told me one thing. He said, son, we were building this another mill. Son, I want to help you here because I don't want you making the same mistakes I made. So I learned, Nordic and I talk about, he's one of the people. I call him. I get information from him. I get information from a lot of people in this room. And I've been mentored on these hardwood tours, just talking to people that work at a certain mill. You may just ask them a certain question, and you put it back in the back of your mind. Traveling around with this group right here, this HMA, and going on these tours, you're bound to learn something that you can carry back and make your business much more successful.
Yeah. And on that note, that's one of the things we wanted to showcase in this panel that they just touched on, is what is a mentor? And a mentor doesn't just have to be, it is that generational passing down of information, but it's also in that peer-to-peer mentorship as well. And that's why some of these guys are on the stage next to each other, because they're comrades in this. And so to showcase what that looks like. But next we're going to move on to our younger guys up here. And we're going to ask you, what do you want to gain from your mentors?
One thing I look at when seeking out a mentor is, you know, I'm kind of like Mr. Bob here. I don't feel like failing a lot, so I want to call somebody who's been there, who's, you know, been knocked down, because, you know, somebody's success, somebody's bread and butter might not translate my operation of being, you know, being successful here, but people's failures are about universal. Mm-hmm. So if that didn't work out for, you know, Mr. Skipper, it's probably not going to work out for me. I'm not going to go that route. You know, I might kind of veer off to the left lane or stay sort of in the center. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a gang, you know, cutting flitches off of something, or, you know, just some type of, you know, different thing you try to want to do within your operation.
Still answering the question. What do you want to gain from a mentor?
You know, for me, I guess what I'm trying to gain from a mentor, you know, I wasn't necessarily really good in school, so sitting in a classroom being taught didn't really work for me. But I've, you know, mentorship, having somebody that would help teach me and find that teacher, somebody that would talk to me, talk me through it, show me how to do it, and then help build confidence for the decision that I'm going to get to make inevitably is what I've looked for and I've been able to find.
One thing that everybody here has talked about it is the relationships. You don't live in the same state or even close by, but you can pick up the phone and bounce a question or an idea off of your mentor. But not only that, you come to these meetings and it's not it's like you never drifted apart. You pick up right where you left off before, and you move on, and you have a good time, and then a few days later you go on your way and back at it again. But the relationships is what I really look for in a mentor.
Thank you. And next we're going to our next gen guys are going to ask the mentors some questions. Jeff, we're going to start with you.
My question is, how do you build those relationships? That'd be for the guys in the front. They've done it. They know the rules of the road, so to speak.
I guess because it's on the script, I'll go first, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things I remember when I first started coming to these meetings, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago or so, I didn't know anybody, and just through panels or presentations, you started to understand who were some of the key players in the industry. And I remember Mr. Paul Berenger and Jerry Williams and Ron Jones and Milt Cole, and I'd sit at a table for breakfast or lunch and just listen to what they had to say, and it was fun too, because you know they knew each other for a long time and I could tell, and not everyone had the same advice or the same philosophy, but you could really pick up what their the experiences that they had throughout the years. And I'd just sit there at the table and I wouldn't talk. I'd listen to them. They'd start asking me questions and I didn't know anything, but then I started to build relationships with them through those sit downs and them asking questions back of me. But just putting yourself out there and talking to people, and it doesn't matter who it is in this industry, everybody is approachable and everybody is willing to help. Somebody, Bob, I think mentioned it this morning. I say it's a brotherhood and a sisterhood, and it really is that way. But put yourself out there. Introduce yourself to anybody and everybody if you don't know them. And don't be afraid to ask questions. I was a little more afraid to ask questions, but don't be afraid to ask questions.
And I'd probably echo exactly what Troy just said. You know, you've got to make the concerted effort of getting out there and talking to the people. And it's not only, I'll tell you what, HMA is the best organization for doing this, because we have so much commonality. You know, when it comes down to, we do the same thing. It doesn't matter if you're in, Georgia, Alabama, or Indiana. We're doing the same thing. We have the same, trials and tribulations, just like anyone else. Now, if you're looking on the personal side, you'll probably have to go back to your hometown and get around people that, in your hometown to better yourself there if you're talking more on a personal level. But definitely on a professional level, you're at the right place at the right time. I guess the thing that to further add to this, it takes self-awareness. You have to know what you need and find that exact person who's willing to give you that or has the ability to give you what you need. So they've got to have the time. They have to have the ability. They have to have the encouragement. They have to empower you. They have to challenge you. So it's not only just networking, but it's also finding that right person that's willing and able to give you, what you need to help you with whatever you're struggling with.
I think the thing that I would encourage, the younger people, I think you got to put your phone down. I think you got to disengage that thing, cut it off, and really open yourself up in a genuine way to want to meet people and learn their story. Where are you from? I mean, it's a great way to open up a conversation. What kind of meal do you have? Tell me about your equipment. You know, what do you think about the market? You know, let it learn. And some of the folks will open up more than others. But it'll give you an avenue to really start really engaging the older generation. When I say older generation, you know, it's not that we've got all the answers or anything like that, but we got a lot of calluses. And maybe we can help you guys maybe not make some of the mistakes that we made. And we can help pick you up if you do. But being genuine and just engaging people and you got to be willing to you know, as the old saying, you got to work the room. You got to get to know people. And that's hard work. And a lot of folks have kind of retrenched into their own little worlds. And it's really important, I think. I know Pim Jenkins invited me personally, pivotal time in my life, where he invited me to be a part of a small group, a little round table. It was pivotal for me. And I thanked him for that many times. I mean, that one investment of him creating an opportunity for me to get to know people, and that's where so many of the friendships I have today, my closest friends in the lumber business today, were in that group. And that was the beginning for me. And I think that engaging people like that, I'd really challenge y'all in that regard.
Boy, Nordic, you read my script. I echo that. I do think that a way to engage people in this industry, first of all, is have started young, and of course learned every facet of this industry that you can. That means getting your hands dirty, and a lot of young people today just don't want to make the effort. I also think it's very important too if you want to engage and have a mentor. A mentor's got to have, if he's going to spend any time with you, you should respect him, and he needs to respect you. And so you earn that trust. And coming to these meetings, I've probably been coming to the HMA for 20 years. Pam talked me into the HMA. I said, I'm not joining an association. I've been in some of them before, and I don't have time. Well, here, I've become a pretty good supporter of the HMA throughout the years, and I thank Pam a lot for bringing me in, because I have made tremendous friends in this organization, and I've learned a lot. It's been very beneficial to me. Of course, I made a great friend with Pam over the years as well. So, but I will tell you, it's just like when you learn from these people, you don't always learn in an environment like this. I mean, think about this. I had a fella, and who would do this? I had a fella in Antigo, Wisconsin, call me up and say, we have a lake that's frozen over here. We're going to drill a little hole in this lake. You can sit out there for 2 days and see if we can catch a fish. And we did. I caught a fish this long. I flew all the way to upper Wisconsin. It was about 0 degrees. And yet, it was probably some of the best time I've ever spent with a sawmiller doing. And Richard Wilkerson did the same thing. I talked Richard into it, I think. But anyway, you just got to spend time with the people and develop these relationships and friendships, and it'll pay great dividends going forward. Thank you.
One thing, Skipper did know how to dress when he came to Wisconsin Nice Fish with us, and Richard showed up and he had a bag. A knapsack, and I said, "Do you have a check bag?" And Richard said, "No, this is all I have." And I'm like, "You are in trouble tomorrow. You are going to freeze." I can't do that, Jeff.
Sounds like we need to start going on more trips, young folks. Where do we want to go first? Okay, yeah, ice fishing. Nick, you're up.
All right. The next question on this list of questions is, what have you learned? You know, what is the key piece of wisdom that you were taught by your mentor that you carry with you today?
Well, I think your word is your bond. My father used to make deals on a handshake. And they didn't use a whole lot of paper and contracts. That was a different time. But I do think that you tell somebody you're going to do something, whether it's in sales or your labor. If you tell your employees you're going to do something, by God, you need to do it. You need to follow through. And just because it's not convenient doesn't mean you don't do it. on timber. You buy timber, prices change, they fluctuate. The way we buy it quite often is if it goes down, that doesn't make any difference. If lumber prices go down, timber price stays the same. If it goes up, we honor our commitments. And that's not always easy when you're not making money, is because markets change. So, and if you're selling something to your customers, after all, you're in business to satisfy your customers. And, of course, I also think it's nice to be able to take home a little bit of money to satisfy my family needs. But if you're true to your word with your customers, your suppliers, your employees, then if you're reasonably efficient, you should carve out a nice niche for yourself in this industry.
Two little tidbits from two men that were the most pivotal men in my career. One was my father, and the other one was Larry's daddy, my Uncle Tommy. My dad had a simple theory about sawmilling. He was a good production man. He said a sawmill has a rhythm. It goes blip, blip, blip. You do that all day, and you get everything on a truck and collect the money. If you buy your logs right, you'll be able to do okay. He said, but if it goes blip, 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 you missed one, you can never get it back. And then Uncle Tommy probably gave me the best piece of advice I've ever. Actually, this was a twofold thing when I was looking at starting my own mill back in 91. He said, son, if you're going to start a mill, you need to find a place with the right timber. And he had a very much of a North Augusta brogue. And he said, son, you got to find where there's some good timber. And he said, go get the U.S. Forest Service census data and study the southeast and find a hole and don't let it be near the Atlantic Ocean. He said, that's a clear cut. The other piece of advice he gave me, and I called him up one day and I was kind of down, you know, I was about 3 months into this adventure. And he said, well, I got a piece of advice for you, son. He said, don't make any big mistakes. Kind of a pause. I'm waiting. I think he'd already had a scotch that afternoon, Larry. And he finished up and he said, and you better make damn few little ones. That was it. And he was right. So those were the two men, and I love them both. But they were very pivotal in my career.
And now their grandsons are on the stage, too. So just wanted to an example of generational mentorship right here.
I have two occasions that I remember and I'll never forget. Going back to the interview, it was 1981. I was 12 years old. And back then, I would rather be playing with my friends, riding bikes or playing baseball. But my father, he was a workaholic, and even to this day, he's 88 years old. He'll come in every day to work, and you'll never tell him to stay home. But I remember he would just be relentless. Bob, I need you to come up to the mill. We've got some work to do. We've got logs that we need to buck up. Let's go. And I would fight him. I would resist him. And I remember two managers back then pulling me to the side, and they said, do you understand how your father feels each time you resist him? And I said, no, I don't understand this. And they explained it to me, and at that point in time, it clicked. The perception of how I come across to others, I needed to change, because the last thing I want to do is hurt my father. So from that day on, I said, you know what? The behavior I've got to change. Work comes first. Other things in life come after that. And to this day, I do drive my wife nuts, because it's like, we've got to get this work done, and then we can do the other things in life. But that's one. The other thing, I think it was 2008, I was going to my first HMA board meeting. I remember walking into that boardroom knowing only about a handful of people, and I thought, what have I got myself into? You know, back then I was very shy, very quiet. For me to get up here to do this, forget it. You know, that's 11 years ago, and I have to attribute HMA because of this. But anyway, Terry Brennan was the president of HMA at the time. And so he called the meeting to order, and we got into some deep discussions. Halfway into the meeting, Terry stopped, looked up. Bob Miller, what do you think about this? I thought, oh, my God, he just called me out. Now I've got to give an answer. I really don't want to respond. I want this to be a quiet meeting on my part. And I remember going into that meeting, basically, and him calling me out, and I spoke from the heart. Exactly how I felt. And at the end, I felt really good because the membership or the board members around that meeting agreed with what I had to say. And I thought, you know what? I've got to pull myself out of my comfort zone going forward. I cannot continue to be quiet and not be a part of something especially as great as HMA. And so I have to basically thank Terry Brennan for doing that, pulling me out of that comfort zone. And this is not natural. This does not come natural to me. It is out of my comfort zone, but yet I forced myself to do it.
There were just three quick things that Dan Kretz preached to me, and number one was know your cost to the penny, and number two is it's not a sale until you get paid, and number three is I don't care what you did the night before, you're going to be at work the next morning on time. Mm-hmm. That's good advice to my mentorees.
Okay, Nathan, you're up.
Okay, my question is, how have your mentors helped you over the years?
I'll go ahead and start. When you look at it, you know, my communication skills, based off of what Terry taught me, work ethics from my father, family values from my father also, you know, there's just so many different, you know, the aspects of Frank Miller Lumber Company, operations and some other areas of the company, you know, learning that from the family. And then also learning more about the industry from each one of you. And, you know, those are some of the key things that I've picked up in my life that I think are critical and crucial and very valuable.
Yeah, I think of that question maybe even just a little differently, and sometimes our peers are our mentors too, and again, the value of this organization. And briefly, the recession was tough on all of us, and during that time there were some pretty key people that were instrumental in just helping me personally through that. Charlie Netterville was awesome. Charlie and I, we talk often on the phone Sundays. It didn't matter when it was, and I called Charlie and just, you know, emotionally, you know, the support that we got. Just a little brief story during the recession. You know, we actually even had to leave associations, and unfortunately at that time the HMA was one of them. But yet, you know, the everyone in the HMA and the association, I get phone calls just periodically, how are you doing? And I appreciated all of them. And just to hang in there, you know, things will get better. So, like I said, peers can become mentors, and they're really a good emotional support group sometimes too when you really need them. And thinking of that, Charlie and Pam and you know, a lot of you others too, we do rely on each other, and I can appreciate that. So
okay, how have they helped me? I don't. That is such a broad question. I mean, when you think about it, I think for more than anything for me has been, you know, the emotional support. My dad being my main mentor all those years, teaching me in the mill. I don't know. He was just he believed that running a sawmill with a C-set of 4-plat pop whip and a 38 pistol. He was a hard-driving guy that really ran that mill hard, and he really taught me that you just really you have to, if you're going to run a sawmill, you have to lead your people, but you have to really set a momentum, a pace for your operation, and that's what he did. He set a pace for the business, and people got in behind him just like he was leading a marching band, and he was the band director, and you had to walk in time and in step with his rhythm, and that has really helped me all these years to understand that these businesses have a rhythm, even a seasonal rhythm, and there's things that you need to do as a leader. So he really helped me in that regard from a leadership perspective, and really helped develop in me, you know, kind of a Thompson passion for cutting lumber. It's been a great help for me.
Well, I continue to learn from my mentors, even though some of them are not alive any longer, through memories. And my dad was one, I worked for the Haggerty's for a while up in Mackey's Ferry, and I'll never forget one of them said, "We have to have repeat business," and I've never forgotten that, because you know it costs a lot of money to lose a customer, and it costs a lot to acquire another customer if you're lucky to do that. So, but I think the mentors, what they've done for me, they've enabled me, they've made my life rich. And by that, I don't mean wealthy. By that, I mean they've introduced me into probably one of the greatest, most noble professions there is, and that is sawmilling. And whether it be pine or hardwood, it makes no difference, although hardwood's superior in my estimation. But they've enriched my life in so many ways, because it's, where else are you going to find people of this caliber, this quality, this friendly? They'll open their business to you and share. They want you to succeed. And we are competitors, yes, but we're also at heart somewhat of a family. So this is a tremendous industry. I'm thrilled to be a part of it. And I owe my mentors that.
Well, y'all have anything else to add down on the front? Okay, and we're moving on. Now we're going to throw the floor back to this back group.
Okay, I have a question for you. What qualities do you look for in your mentors, and why?
I look for a mentor, or you know, just come walking upon a mentor. Somebody who's kind of headstrong, who's kind of been there before, who's been in tough situations, been able, whether they crawled out of a hole or they avoided the hole all in general, just in general. But is like I said, I kind of want to, dodge some of those tight situations. And, a lot of times you're not going to dodge them. But if you get around people who's been in those situations, they can help you out. One of the big person who's helped me a lot inside the mill, especially with the gang, is, John Hubbard. If I didn't have John Hubbard my first year of sawmilling, I'd been in trouble. I would have made a lot more mistakes than I did. I'm pretty good at making a lot of big mistakes, but he was able to help me out where it wasn't near as costly.
Kind of like what all of the mentors in the front row said, having somebody to that you can pick up the phone and call and talk about whether it be family related, business, personal, whatever. That's something I look for in a mentor, is somebody I can relate to, somebody I can open up to, if you will, but also somebody that'll drag me out of a hole when I get myself into one.
All right, so what qualities do you look for in a mentor, and why? For me, what I look for in a mentor is someone who'll shoot me straight. Not sugarcoat it, and tell me the truth. Tell me what I'm doing, and if it's right or if it's wrong. And the other one is someone that cares about my success. They're not talking to me to get something out of it. They're talking to me to help me. And the guys that have mentored me, I know they have the knowledge, but I trust that they are looking out for my best interests.
Next question.
What would you like us to learn from you?
Boy, Troy, that's a real valid question.
Thanks for the question, Claire.
You're welcome.
We're the technology people, so there's some things that we can bring to the table, such as technology, and we're a little bit more savvy. So some of those items, you know, we tend to be able to help you all a little bit better in that regard.
One of the things we could probably help with is, and a lot of people discussed it in the video, and that's the ever-changing technology in the industry. You know, we've been around the, you know, advancing technology since the early 2000s. A lot of us kind of been around it, and we were, I guess, you know, old saying, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Well, we were pretty young when all that was coming around. Y'all were in your 30s and 40s. So we might be able to, you know, identify some of this automation that's really going to help sawmills or wherever, whatever operation we're in, we can, you know, point it out maybe quicker than, you know, somebody 40 or 50 years old, and, you know, identify places you really need to spend the money on, you know, optimizing an operation.
With the innovation and the future and all that stuff, of course, you know, we want to make our mark, you know, so we want to come up with something new. We want to have a new idea and say, hey, man, the way we're doing it today, there's got to be a new way to do it. But honestly, I don't know if, you know, I think that the younger generation, we have a tendency of not being humble enough. And so we are too bold in saying this is just how it's got to be. And in actuality, we have a little to teach, but mostly a lot to learn.
Okay. We are learning that in our facilities every day. Exactly what he said. I might need to record him to play it back to him.
Yeah, I may not follow that all the time.
Okay, Daddy, you can ask the next question.
Okay, how do we recruit, train, and maintain you guys?
Okay, so I guess it's my turn to go first. To me, the thing is that our generation, we really want something to believe in and something that's worth our career. You know, something that's actually worth the time for us to invest in. And our industry has an incredible story. And what we do is very valuable to society as a whole. And so I think that if on the higher level folks that you're trying to bring in, the management level kids that are all going, you know, 4-year degrees, master's degrees and all that, we're looking for an industry that we can invest in and something we can help bring value to the world. And then also, you know, then you have, but every group of people in our generation need something differently. So the other piece to that, I really do believe, is that it's not cookie cutter. It's an individual basis. So if you don't have the time to look at somebody and learn about them and study them and realize what motivates them, then you will not have success in retaining them because you're not taking the energy to understand what it is they need. And if you don't know what they need, how can you give it to them?
Yeah, I don't know how to follow that answer up. That was pretty good. You know, I know how to recruit us, and that's with money. But as far as training and maintaining, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Training, my dad, he put me out. You can't do it. Do this with everybody, but you know, I know Georgia Pacific, they used to have people out there, you know, training the mill, at least, you know, be in the sawmill for at least a couple of months, you know, a month or two, just get an idea of what you're doing in the sawmill. And you know, I think that's real great, but a lot of people, you know, in my age group, you know, wouldn't think it's that great. They would feel like they didn't have the same amount of value, you know. Oh, they think I'm a joke. I'm out here pulling lumber. But, you know, that's kind of just part of it. As far as elaborating past that, I think it takes a special kind of person to do what we do. I don't think it's for everybody. And just trying to identify, you know, who that person is, what you know, what kind of common qualities we all have is what we'll have to start looking at to, you know, picking out this, these special people that will be in our industry.
My opinion on the deal is our generation, we want to feel like we're a part of something where we have a belonging, some kind of, you know, position there. But not only that, but, you know, to maintain somebody at our age, I feel, you know, there always has to be another level to climb up to. I think once people our age feel like they've reached the top, there's going to be somewhere greener to go graze in, and I've had the fortunate opportunity to you know, always have another ring to climb, if you will. So that's my take on the question.
Our final question, Skipper, make it good.
All right. Nick, question for you. How do you see the industry today, and where do you see it going?
Well, I'm very confident in the White Woods, pretty confident in the White Oak, just because stave's going to keep the stave market's going to drive the White Oak log up, so if people want White Oak lumber, they're going to have to pay more for the White Oak lumber. But as Red Oak, I don't know about Red Oak. We'll just have to market it more. You know, my dad has a lot of Red Oak paneling in his house and great stain on it, but you don't see a lot of that new construction, you know. Putting Red Oak out there and paneling and things like that, you know, advertising it, that might help us. That might keep us in a domestic market. But, I think we might eventually have some trouble in the Red Oak market. So just, and cherry too. Cherry's another big one.
Well, let me mention this. Don't be specific to the species. Be okay. more general to the, where you see the direction of the, for instance, we've lost furniture plants and we've had these other exports take over some of that business. But how do you see it going forward in the future from industrial versus grade, or what products will be available? What are you young kids seeing and thinking that you might want in the future? Because you don't want to buy furniture, it doesn't look like.
Yeah. I think that production is going to slowly drop just because production is going to drop and demand is eventually going to pick back up, because I don't see as many people in our generation getting in this business and a lot more people retiring than actually selling out, just auctioning off or something like that, which our production, I think, will drop back down, and, you know, supply and demand will take its course, and I think we'll be all right.
You're up, Nick. Okay.
Everybody on the video said it's ever changing. It wasn't. I heard a comment, you know, saying it's not the same it was 20 years ago, and the way it looks, it's not going to be the same 20 years from now. So it's I think our age generation, we need to be able to change fast, because it will change fast, and I think that's one thing we can bring to the table is we do adapt pretty quick, and so hopefully that will help us be successful as these guys in front of us have been going forward.
And so the question of how do you see the industry and how can we help you? Honestly, I think the industry is going to do fantastic, and I'm incredibly optimistic about it, and I will give you my reasoning. So just like Jeff and Nathan said, you know, we're going to change. We're going to have new products that come up. We're going to do CLT. We're going to make prefab homes out of our products that we put wiring in, ship them in containers all over the world. We're going to figure out what to do with our raw material. But guys, the thing is, at the end of the day, there's only so many things you can build things with on our planet. And we are in charge of harvesting and converting one of the primary ones, which is hardwood lumber in North America. And so if if you want to be scared of the future, you can be scared of it. But at the end of the day, we are there's going to be a use for forest products, and there's going to be a use for North American hardwood forest products. Every day, it's going to be our job as the industry, it's going to be our job to listen to the mentors and be wise, to heed their advice, and then innovate into the future. And those of us that are willing to do that and willing not to be lazy and willing to get up and go to work, we're going to do great. And that's how I feel about it.
Awesome. Very good. Very good. Well, on that note, does anybody in the audience have any questions for the panelists? Jack Shannon, he was a former NextGener. What is Jeff's favorite color?
Today I have two, and it's black and gold.
Any other questions? Well, with that, if you are new to the industry or you feel like you don't have these types of relationships that you've heard talked about, not just in this panel, but throughout the day, the last 2 days, we want to help you build those. We want for you to feel this. And one of the ways we're going to do that here at 5:15, we've got the NextGen reception. It is hosted by the NextGen leaders, but everyone is welcome to come. And if you don't have these types of relationships, get out there, put your phone down, shake somebody's hand, and introduce yourself and see where that takes you. And thank you so much for your time today.